Chapter 40. The hotel which S.E. had given him as her address looked right out upon him, and the sea beyond, and he rested there with the pleasing hope that her eyes might glance from a window and discover his form. Everything in the scene was sunny and gay. Behind him in the gardens a band was playing. Before him was the sea, the great sea, the historical and original Mediterranean. The sea of innumerable characters in history and legend, that arranged themselves before him in a long frieze of memory so diverse, as to include both Aeneas and St. Paul. Northern eyes are not prepared on a sudden for the impact of such images of warmth and color as meet them southward, or for the vigorous light that falls from the sky of this favored shore. In any other circumstances, the transparency and serenity of the air, the perfume of the sea, the radiant houses, the palms and flowers, would have acted upon Somerset as an enchantment, and wrapped him in a reverie. But at present he only saw, and felt these things, as through a thick glass which kept out half their atmosphere. At last he made up his mind. He would take up his quarters at her hotel, and catch echoes of her and her people, to learn somehow, if their attitude towards him as a lover were actually hostile, before formally encountering them. Under this crystalline light, full of gaieties, sentiment, languor, seductiveness, and ready-made romance, the memory of a solitary unimportant man in the lugubrious north might have faded from her mind. He was only her hired designer. He was an artist. But he had been engaged by her, and was not a volunteer, and she did not as yet know that he meant to accept no return for his labors, but the pleasure of presenting them to her as a love offering. So off he went at once towards the imposing building, whither his letters had preceded him. Owing to a press of visitors there was a moment's delay, before he could be attended to at the bureau, and he turned to the large staircase that confronted him, momentarily hoping that her figure might descend. Her skirts must indeed have brushed the carpeting of those steps scores of times. He engaged his room, ordered his luggage to be sent for, and finally inquired for the party he sought. "They left Nice yesterday, Monsieur," apostrophe replied Madame. "Was she quite sure?" Somerset asked her. "Yes, she was quite sure. Two of the hotel carriages had driven them to the station." "Did she know where they had gone to?" This and other inquiries resulted in the information that they had gone to the hotel at Monte Carlo, that how long they were going to stay there, and whether they were coming back again, was not known. His final question whether Miss Power had received a letter from England which must have arrived the day previous was answered in the affirmative. Somerset's first and sudden resolve was to follow on after them to the hotel named, but he finally decided to make his immediate visit to Monte Carlo only a cautious reconnoiter, returning to Nice to sleep. Accordingly, after an early dinner, he again set forth through the broad Avenue de la Guerre, and an hour on the coast railway brought him to the beautiful and sinister little spot to which the Power and the Stancy party had strayed in common with the rest of the frivolous throng. He assumed that their visit thither would be chiefly one of curiosity, and therefore not prolonged. This proved to be the case in even greater measure than he had anticipated. On inquiry at the hotel he learned that they had stayed only one night, leaving a short time before his arrival, though it was believed that some of the party were still in the town. In a state of indecision, Somerset strolled into the gardens of the casino and looked out upon the sea. There it still lay, calm yet lively, of an unmixed blue, yet variegated, hushed, but articulate even to melodiousness. Everything about and around this coast appeared indeed jaunty, tuneful, and at ease, reciprocating with heartiness the rays of the splendid sun. Everything, except himself. The palms and flowers on the terraces before him were undisturbed by a single cold breath. The marble work of parapets and steps was unsplintered by frosts. The whole was like a conservatory with the sky for its dome. For want of other occupation he went round towards the public entrance to the casino, and ascended the great staircase into the pillared hall. It was possible, after all, that upon leaving the hotel and sending on their luggage they had taken another turn through the rooms, to follow by a later train. With more than curiosity he scanned first the reading rooms, only however to see not a face that he knew. He then crossed the vestibule to the gaming tables. IV. Here he was confronted by a heated phantasmagoria of splendor, and a high pressure of suspense, that seemed to make the air quiver. A low whisper of conversation prevailed, which might probably have been not wrongly defined as the lowest note of social harmony. The people gathered at this negative pole of industry had come from all civilized countries. Their tongues were familiar with many forms of utterance, that of each racial group or type being unintelligible in its subtler variations, if not entirely, to the rest. But the language of Numantuum they collectively comprehended without translation. In a half-charmed spellbound state they had congregated in knots, standing, or sitting in hollow circles round the notorious oval tables marked with figures and lines. The eyes of all these sets of people were watching the roulette. Somerset went from table to table, looking among the loungers, rather than among the regular players, for faces, or at least for one face, which did not meet his gaze. The suggestive charm which the centuries-old impersonality gaming, rather than games and gamesters, had for Somerset, led him to loiter on, even when his hope of meeting any of the power and the Stancy party had vanished. As a non-participant in its profits and losses, fevers and frenzies, it had that stage effect upon his imagination which is usually exercised over those who behold chance presented to them with spectacular piquancy without advancing far enough in its acquaintance, to suffer from its ghastly reprisals and impish tricks. He beheld 100 diametrically opposed wishes issuing from the murky intelligences around a table, and spreading down across each other upon the figure diagram in their midst, each to its own number. It was a network of hopes, which at the announcement, September, Rouge, Impair, et Mang, apostrophe disappeared like magic gossamer, to be replaced in a moment by new. That all the people there, including himself, could be interested in, what to the eye of perfect reason was a somewhat monotonous thing, the property of numbers, to recur at certain longer or shorter intervals in a machine containing them. In other words, the blind groping after fractions of a result, the whole of which was well known, was one testimony among many of the powerlessness of logic when confronted with imagination. At this juncture our lounger discerned at one of the tables about the last person in the world he could have wished to encounter there. It was Dare, whom he had supposed to be 1,000 miles off, hanging about the purlieus of Markton. Dare was seated beside a table in an attitude of application which seemed to imply that he had come early, and engaged in this pursuit in a systematic manner. Somerset had never witnessed Dare and the Stancy together, neither had he heard of any engagement of Dare by the traveling party as artist, courier, or otherwise, and yet it crossed his mind that Dare might have had something to do with them, or at least have seen them. This possibility was enough to overmaster Somerset's reluctance to speak to the young man, and he did so as soon as an opportunity occurred. Dare's face was as rigid and dry as if it had been encrusted with plaster, and he was like one turned into a computing machine which no longer had the power of feeling. He recognized Somerset as indifferently as if he had met him in the ward of Stancy Castle, and replying to his remarks by a word or two, concentrated on the game menu. "Are you here alone?" said Somerset presently. "Quite alone." There was a silence, till Dare added, "But I have seen some friends of yours." He again became absorbed in the events of the table. Somerset retreated a few steps, and pondered the question whether Dare could know where they had gone. He disliked to be beholden to Dare for information, but he would give a great deal to know. While pausing he watched Dare's play. He staked only 5 franc pieces, but it was done with an assiduity worthy of larger coin. At every half minute or so he placed his money on a certain spot, and as regularly had the mortification of seeing it swept away by the croupier's rake. After a while he varied his procedure. He risked his money, which from the look of his face seemed rather to have dwindled than increased, less recklessly against long odds than before. Leaving off backing numbers en plain, he laid his venture at evil, then tried it upon the dozens, then upon two numbers, then upon a square, and, apparently getting nearer and nearer defeat, at last upon the simple chances of even or odd, over or under, red or black. Yet with a few fluctuations in his favor fortune bore steadily against him, till he could breast her blows no longer. He rose from the table, and came towards Somerset, and they both moved on together into the entrance hall. There was at that moment the victim of an overpowering mania for more money. His presence in the south of Europe had its origin, as may be guessed, in Captain Destancy's journey in the same direction, whom he had followed, and troubled with persistent request for more funds, carefully keeping out of sight of Paula and the rest. His dream of involving Paula in the Destancy pedigree knew no abatement. But Somerset had lighted upon him at an instant when that idea, though not displaced, was overwhelmed by a rage for play. In hope of being able to continue it by Somerset's aid, he was prepared to do almost anything to please the architect. "You ask me," apostrophe said Dare, stroking his impassive brow, "if I had seen anything of the powers. I have seen them. And if I can be of any use to you in giving information about them, I shall only be too glad." Apostrophe apostrophe, "What information can you give?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "I can tell you where they are gone to." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Where?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "To the Grand Hotel, Genoa. They went on there this afternoon." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Whom do you refer to by they?" Apostrophe apostrophe apostrophe, "Mrs. Goodman, Mr. Power, Miss Destancy, and the worthy captain. He leaves them tomorrow. He comes back here for a day on his way to England." Apostrophe apostrophe, Somerset was silent. Dare continued. "Now I have done you a favor, will you do me one in return?" Apostrophe apostrophe, Somerset looked towards the gaming rooms, and said dubiously, "Well?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Lend me 200 francs. Apostrophe apostrophe, "Yes," apostrophe said Somerset, "but on one condition. That I don't give them to you till you are inside the hotel you are staying at." Apostrophe apostrophe, "That can't be, it's at Nice." Apostrophe apostrophe, "Well, I am going back to Nice, and I'll lend you the money the instant we get there." Apostrophe apostrophe, "But I want it here, now, instantly." Apostrophe apostrophe, cried Dare, and for the first time there was a wiry unreasonableness in his voice, that fortified his companion more firmly than ever in his determination to lend the young man no money, whilst he remained inside that building. "You wanted to throw it away. I don't approve of it, so come with me." Apostrophe apostrophe, "But," apostrophe said Dare, "I arrived here with 100 napoleons and more, expressly to work out my theory of chances and recurrences, which is sound. I have studied it hundreds of times by the help of this." Apostrophe apostrophe, he partially drew from his pocket the little volume that we have before seen in his hands. "If I only persevere in my system, the certainty that I must win is almost mathematical. I have staked and lost 233 times, allowing out of that one chance in every 36, which is the average of zero being marked, and 204 times for the backers of the other numbers, I have the mathematical expectation of 6 times at least, which would nearly recoup me. And shall I, then, sacrifice that vast foundation of waste chances that I have laid down and paid for, merely for want of a little ready money?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "You might persevere for a 12-month, and still not get the better of your reverses. Time tells in favor of the bank. Just imagine, for the sake of argument, that all the people who have ever placed a stake upon a certain number, to be one person playing continuously. Has that imaginary person won? The existence of the bank is a sufficient answer. Apostrophe apostrophe, but a particular player has the option of leaving off at any point favorable to himself, which the bank has not, and there's my opportunity. Apostrophe apostrophe, which from your mood you will be sure not to take advantage of. Apostrophe apostrophe, I shall go on playing, apostrophe said Dare doggedly. Not with my money. Apostrophe apostrophe, very well, we won't part as enemies, apostrophe replied Dare, with the flawless politeness of a man whose speech has no longer any kinship with his feelings. Shall we share a bottle of wine? You will not? Well, I hope your luck with your lady will be more magnificent than mine has been here, but mind Captain Destancy. He's a fearful wildfowl for you. Apostrophe, he's a harmless inoffensive soldier, as far as I know. If he is not, let him be what he may for me. Apostrophe apostrophe, and do his worst to cut you out, I suppose? Apostrophe apostrophe, if he will. Apostrophe Somerset, much against his judgment, was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.